All right, no personal or financial conflicts to disclose. So I'm going to briefly talk about, give you a little bit of background, you know, typical methods and results, talk about some policy implications, and then hopefully some next steps that I think vibe totally with what we've heard from the last two presenters. So as I said before, climate change is something that's real to me. I think Catherine did a great job of talking about the health impact, so I'm not going to spend too much time about why climate change is important. But my focus has been for the last 6 or 7 years on extreme heat, again, because I've seen it, I've felt it, and a lot of folks that I care about, unfortunately, I've seen suffer from it. And so 2011, again, at the time of this study, was a pretty hot summer. Again, we've had some pretty hot summers after that. But essentially in 2011, there were, I think, 41 of the 48 states had record-breaking temperatures. There were a lot of extremes going on. And so when I moved to D.C. and understood that D.C. was kind of in the south and I felt the heat, I thought that it would be great to really understand what folks were doing on the ground in dealing with this type of hot summer right after it happened. So the purpose really of this survey was to really look at how folks reacted and adapted right after the summer happened. And I'll tell you about the timeline. But again, I thought about another survey. I mean, you know, there's plenty of surveys, plenty of great work that's been done. But when you think about it, that's really sometimes the best vehicle to use to get a sense of what's going on nationally. Unfortunately, I didn't have the resources or the time to go and visit and do interviews face-to-face with folks nationally, and so decided to use a survey. And this was great because, again, this is just not really a comprehensive list of surveys, but a lot of folks have done some great work regionally. I was able to actually reach out to a lot of these researchers, get some best practices, talk with other folks that had tried to put surveys out, and it really helped inform the tool that I put together. And so the objectives were to really understand what folks were doing to prepare to respond, and then look at the cost of actually trying to adapt and respond to extreme heat during the summer of 2011. And I know this might be hard to see, but I know someone was asking about adaptation, and that's exactly what I tried to get at. I wanted to know not how people felt about climate change, not, you know, if they think that we should be doing more, but I really wanted to know what they did to respond during the summer. Like, actually, what did you do on the ground? And so I created 8 different categories. I won't read them all, but I'll start with collaboration. How did you work with other community responders? Cooling centers, communication and response, distribution of goods like water and fans and AC, financial assistance, outreach and education, relocation, staffing and transportation. So really, these were the 8 categories that were the basis for my survey. And so, because of resources and time, I would have loved to have surveyed the entire United States with all the counties, but that was just not realistic. So what we decided to do was select states on a particular basis, a couple of criteria. First, that they had record-breaking heat records, record-breaking temperatures during the summer of 2011. If they were part of the CDC's Climate Resilient Cities and States program at that time in 2011, and then if they had experienced a significant heat wave event. And so we were able to, again, condense that down to 30 states. And from those 30 states, we randomly selected 20 counties out of each of those states. And so out of those 20 counties, we had about 1,062 folks, individual folks that we sent surveys out to. And I'll tell you kind of what happened after that. And so in terms of survey development, this, you know, again, I have a greater respect for those that do surveys. I had no idea what I was giving myself. But essentially, you know, after you do your lit review, after you talk to folks that have done this before, I actually piloted the survey to a couple of local health departments that weren't going to be a part of the survey sample, just to see, you know, do these questions make sense? Can you answer them? Can you understand them? And so that was really informative. After developing the survey, it ended up being a 38-question survey that we sent out via email using SurveyMonkey. We had a couple of folks request it via fax and even via snail mail. So we wanted to, again, try and accommodate some of our more rural local health departments. And so after the development phase, we deployed the thing. And essentially, we deployed it in October. Again, we had the hot summer, July, August, September. Deployed it in October because, again, we didn't want to have too much recall bias. And then we did several follow-ups, email, phone calls. We sent a shorter survey to the local health departments, those that didn't respond, with one of the last questions being, okay, if you completed the short survey, can you please fill out the long survey? And then after no responses again from some folks, we did a secondary deployment to our secondary contacts, which were, in this case, emergency response departments. And so we went through the same thing, reminders, follow-ups, and again, the shorter survey. So again, we had the long original survey, which was 38 questions, the shorter survey, which was about 3 questions, with the 4th question saying, hey, can you still fill out our larger survey? And so that was kind of the whole 3-tier deployment scheme. And so in addition to that, we added on a couple of different data sources. And I'm sorry that it wasn't showing up that well, but essentially the CDC Wonder database had county level temperature data, which was awesome. And we actually held off on the survey a little while longer to get the 2011 data, which just came out a couple of months ago. We used the American Community Survey to look at demographic information, and then we got some of the extreme records from, of course, the National Climatic Data Center. All right, results. So I'm not sure if this is, hopefully it's showing up pretty well, but essentially you'll see this is a map that shows each of the states, and the number within the state shows the number of respondent counties in that area. So we end up having about a 32% response rate, about 190 folks that responded. And I'm not going to go through all of the data, but a couple of things that I wanted to point out in terms of results is that you'll see one of the first questions that we asked in terms of preparation is if you have a heat plan. And if you do have a heat plan, you actually have a definition of extreme heat. And so as you can hopefully see, 40% of our respondents said that they had some heat plan in place. I mean, 6% really didn't have anything. And then 30% actually had a heat wave definition, which ranged from, if we hit 98 degrees in the state, there for about a week, or we use the National Weather Service definition, all those different types of things. We got a lot of different iterations. Another thing that I want to point out here in terms of response, where those 8 categories come into place, is that the highest frequency of folks said that they did some communication about heat risk. So about 73% of our respondents said, hey, you did do some communication. But then if you go down to the bottom, less of, I guess, adaptation activity was really focused on hiring new staff to actually deal with heat response or help with heat response, as well as provide transportation, which could mean taking someone from, their home to a cooling center or things of that nature, or providing financial assistance to pay their bills, utility bills. So, again, you see a dramatic difference in the percentage of response of adaptation. We also wanted to look at the associations between county characteristics and the probability of actually, again, having a heat plan in place. And what I'll say here, we did a logistic regression, and the main thing, I guess, that was statistically significant was the top line where we looked at population and looked at the 75th percentile versus the 25th percentile of the population. And what we found that, again, the most populous counties actually were more expected to have a heat plan in place. Now, we didn't find any statistical significance in the other measures we looked at, average July temperature, percent poverty, percent population, but again, they were inversely related in that higher poverty meant less likely to have a plan, the same with the percentage of the population over 65 having less likely of having a plan in place. And we took a little time to look by region, because again, when you look at climatic effects, it does change. And we used the regions that were set out by the CDC Wonder database. It was just simple to do that. And what we found that in terms of, if you look at the left-hand graph, that's the percent of counties with heat plans. So that's our definition for preparedness. You can see that the Midwest seemed to have more folks that were prepared than the other regions. Not too much more than Northeast and South. But then when you go to the right, you're looking at average heat response. And what we did, you'll see average heat response index. And basically that index is extremely simple. Out of those 8 adaptation categories that I threw up there before, if any of the counties indicated that they did any activity in any of those adaptation categories, we gave them a 1. So essentially, you can only score between 0 and 9. And what this is saying is that most of the folks in the Northeast had an average heat response index, meaning they did within about 4 of those adaptation categories, at least 4 of the adaptation categories in the Northeast. And the West, again, had about a 1.5. So this is just, again, just gave a sense of how folks were responding by region. Okay, and again, we looked at county characteristics and distributions and associations with heat response, and really the only thing I wanted to point out here was, again, the average heat response seemed to be somewhat associated with having a heat plan, which, again, is not rocket science. Okay, so some of the main findings. You know, many counties are still underprepared, and one of the questions that we did ask, and I didn't put up here, was that, you know, after the summer of 2011, did you actually evaluate how you did or how you responded? And what most counties, you know, said was that they didn't evaluate the response, which I think is really key. Most of the heat response was associated with how hot it was in July of 2011 versus the 10 years that we looked at in the past. And again, most of the frequent responses to adaptation around communication, outreach, and less about relocation, financial assistance, increasing staff, which is interestingly all kind of tied to the money thing, which I think is a recurring theme in our other presentations as well. Okay, I don't know how clear this shows up, but basically I thought this was interesting in that this is from NOAA, and it shows all of the $1 billion weather and climate disasters by state in 2011. And the darker states basically mean more billions of dollars. And so when we think about, you know, again, what are the costs of inaction? You know, we have a pretty decent handle on what these weather, you know, climate disasters cost. Over $1 trillion, you know, attributed to the 144 weather and climate disasters since the 1980s. From January to October 2012, we can have a pretty decent estimate of fatalities and, again, the economic damages. But what I think we know a little about is what are the costs to actually prepare. And so that's what I really wanted to dig into in this phase two of the survey. And so really, again, understanding what resources people are spending on the local level to adapt to heat. The way I attempted to do this was to create a cost worksheet, again, going through the same type of format, getting feedback from, you know, local health departments, seeing if the questions that I'm asking were good. So piloted this worksheet, and what was interesting is that the folks that finished phase one of the survey, one of the last questions was, would you mind filling out another survey about cost? And so 68 folks said that they would, yay. And so to those folks that said yes, I sent them a teaser saying, hey, thank you, sent them kind of some preliminary data from phase one, and then basically sent them the cost worksheet via email, as well as snail mail and fax, for them to fill out from February to March. And so they had about maybe 2 or 3 months to complete the cost worksheet. Now, I can't show the entire worksheet because it's like an 11 by 17 spreadsheet, but essentially at the top of the worksheet it has the location, the person completing it. Again, I went back to those 8 adaptation categories that you could find across the top of the worksheet. And essentially everything that folks mentioned in phase one, I opened a cooling center. Those are the activities that I wanted them to tie the cost back to. So essentially, if you opened a cooling center, I want you to tell me what was the total cost of implementing that activity, what is the source estimate, is it personal knowledge, did you write the check yourself, did you give the money, what were the components of the cost, how much time did you spend, how much staff time, etc. So those were the elements of the cost worksheet. And so what I found out of the 20 counties that responded, was essentially kind of summed up in this, and I'm still doing analysis on this piece, but what you see on the left of this chart is the actual adaptation category. So outreach and education, communication and response, cooling centers, et cetera. You'll see in the next column the number of counties that actually reported this activity, okay? And then I tried to capture, you know, the total cost to implement. Essentially, they were filling out a spreadsheet, and so you'll see, for example, for cooling centers, the max amount expended by a county to run a cooling center for the summer of 2011 was $3,000. The average of those 9 respondents was about $500. And so I tried to do that for each and every adaptation activity that again, the respondents noted. So you'll kind of see, again, in some cases, no one's done anything. In a lot of cases, a lot of the money and time was donated, which was interesting. You'll see in the fourth column, the time spent, so the hours spent to actually do this activity. It ranged, again, from 120 to 0.1. And then the number of staff. Again, this is paid staff, interns, volunteers, et cetera. So, again, very different numbers, but again, just getting that max and average. So, in addition to them actually just filling out the survey, they actually made some notes as well, which was really helpful. And so, what I found that was interesting is that a lot of these places had developed an at-risk registry, and so they spent money actually creating these lists of folks that they wanted to target during extreme heat events. And so the contact list and having this reverse 911 call function was something that they expended money on. Of course, in terms of media, they tried to use free resources, so a lot of public service announcements, using existing connections that they use with other programs within their department, using cooling centers, you know, existing facilities, and again, many in-kind donations for a lot of other things that they were trying to, again, share, water bottles, stands, et cetera. So that is what those 20 respondents told me. And so, of course, with any survey, the first piece is identifying the best context. I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out who was the right person to send this thing to. We pretty much did it by title. If you had environmental health, environmental specialist, something like that, in your title, we assumed that, you know, this might be a part of your role. But again, it was really hard because in most cases, websites weren't updated. There might have been some bad numbers in some cases, so we had to do a lot of calling and rechecking to make sure that we had the best person to complete the survey. Unfortunately, with our random selection, there wasn't really enough low-income minority populations that were part of the segment pool. And again, this is a vulnerable population when it comes to climate change and really anything. And so that was one piece that was a limitation, I believe. And then the best way to capture costs. In a lot of the follow-up conversations with folks about the cost survey, folks are really scared to report numbers. And so how do you get, I guess, people comfortable to share that information that can really inform, you know, the work and what we're trying to do? And so having the time to do it, sharing the numbers, and just being hesitant from this random person that's sending me a survey to share that information was one, again, one of the challenges that, you know, is real and we have to deal with. So next steps, paper is under final review, hopefully. It will come out very soon. We're going to definitely share the results with folks that participated within the survey and really put together a list of best practices. So basically, without tying it to names or counts, but people can actually see and share what other folks are doing. Hopefully that will be helpful in their localities. And then, of course, use this data for advocacy at the federal level because, as was mentioned many times, funds are always an issue. And we can be creative and think out the box in terms of doing stuff at the local level, but we also need funds to do some things as well. So that is something that we'll do moving forward. So in conclusion, you know, I think heat needs to be a part of all planning at the jurisdiction level. We need to find a way to finance this stuff. We need to really continue to research what's effective. I mean, we talked about adaptation, but, you know, is it really doing what we want it to do? I think the cost piece is where we need to go in terms of messaging. You know, climate change can kind of hit you in some ways personally if you dealt with it, et cetera. But until we actually, I think, put a dollar sign on it for some folks, I don't think we're going to convince them that climate change is where we need to invest more resources into it. So I think we need to continue to dig into that cost piece. And then also recognize all vulnerable populations. I mean, we have a lot of reports that come out with some great stuff, great data, but I think we need to be, again, more place more emphasis on those vulnerable populations that, again, are feeling the brunt of climate change at its best. So with that, I definitely have to acknowledge all the survey participants, and for those local health folks in the room, I understand that you always have a lot of stuff going on, and so, you know, I just definitely appreciated them taking the time to fill out the survey. UCS, I was part of the postdoctoral fellowship program, and all of my co-authors, especially Dr. Anderson, who did a lot of the analysis for me, members of the CNE team at UCS, my intern at WEAC, and then Dr. Shivaji Saha at the Centers for Disease Control, who's a great partner, and Ms. Katie Mimnall at University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, who helped with the mapping. So with that, thank you so much for your attention.